You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment. Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Network.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to Cannon Fodder. It is Wednesday, April 17th, 2024, and I'm your good buddy, Joe O'Brien.
Hey, I didn't know the show started. I'm Troy.
Troy's busy sending emails yet again. I caught him. Caught him in the middle of it.
I didn't have Discord on, so I didn't hear all the fun music, and I was just looking at shit and then not looking at you. And now we're doing a show.
And usually you're like, you overplay a bit the big open, you know what I mean? Sometimes you're just like, what's going on? Other times you're like, oh, that voice came out of nowhere. But today that voice really came out of nowhere. It was complete silence for you and then show open.
Yeah, didn't care for that. It really shocked me.
Well, I hope it shocked you, woke you up. Welcome back, everybody. Happy to have you here. We had a week off. The FOD was off for a week, but now we're back. We're back and in business, and this is going to be a juicy FOD. Actually, there are juicy FODs, and then there are juice-tacular FOD zonies. And that's where I'm at for this one, dude. Tons of big news on
what
this one.
What makes it a juice-tacular FODzoni?
We have been a little bit quiet-ish on news in recent weeks. Big news on this one. Lots of We Are Stupid, lots of listener mail, and they're all going to create good and interesting conversations. We're actually only going to delve into a little bit of the episode for reasons I'll explain when we get there. But let's get down to business because we got a chunky one here ahead of us, buddy. I want to talk first and foremost about a big live stream that is happening this Saturday night, a live tabletop RPG stream on Twitch, which we have not done yet this year. Right? Yeah, we have not done yet this year.
Now, first one of 2024, hopefully first of many.
Yeah, well, I guess we did do Labs, but this is not Labs.
I thought you were just talking about Strange Aeons. Oops,
yeah, so this is Strange Aeons live Saturday night on Twitch. Tell the people what's going on. Tell them what you were thinking and why we're doing this.
Well, I talked about this earlier in the year. I was like, I really want to start chunking through Strange Aeons and supplementing the tour with some Twitch shows, with some live streams. We had so much fun doing it last year and the year before as we were trying to fill that gap between Giant Slayer and Gatewalkers. We just haven't done it in a while. And the way that Toronto show ended, I had two options. One, have that big climactic fight start in KC, or two, let's do that fight online and then take a big pivot for the KC and Austin shows. And that's the way that I wanted to go. So we're going to do that fight and get people all excited for the KC Austin shows. And then, you know, without being too spoilery, things take a bit of a turn after this this show Saturday night. I don't even know how long the episode is going to be. Like, we are going to do this fight and that's the app. Like, I want you guys to really.
Oh, okay. So it could be like an hour.
Could be an hour, could be two.
Could be five.
I don't think it'll be five. But we'll see. It'll be a lot of goofing off, I'm sure. But
God, it's going to be 30 minutes before we roll initiative. I mean, unless we rolled initiative before. I don't even remember where we're at. I got to catch up.
We recorded in the studio yesterday some Gatewalkers, and it was the first time we had been together since 2 days after Toronto, which is the last time we recorded. So we haven't hung out in a while, and it was a little punchy yesterday. I'm sure it's going to be Punch Drunk Love on Saturday. But we're live. It's going to be live on Twitch, 8 p.m. Eastern. So come check us out. We haven't been live in a while.
And spread the word. As for those of you whose friends maybe aren't always up on the FOD quickly, but who love to watch, you know, us stream live, make sure they know that we're going live on Saturday night, because this is a very last minute thing, and we're going to be excited to hop on there live together and play for you guys. And then, of course, it'll be recorded, it'll be mastered, and it'll be released on YouTube. Tuesday we're hoping for, right, next week?
Tuesday. I was just going back and forth. It's either going to drop Tuesday at midnight, so Monday at midnight, basically, or Sunday at midnight. It's possible it may come out earlier, but it won't be dropping like the night after, because we have to get the video all pro. It's live, so we have to clean up the audio and get everything synced, throw some heads and tails on it.
Plenty to do there, yeah.
Yeah, but it'll be out. Check the schedule, you'll see.
Awesome. Okay. Next we have, we talked about these briefly, but now they're actually dropping. A couple days ago, Monday night, we premiered The Laundry, premiered on YouTube, mm-hmm. which was a one shot from Cubicle 7 Games, their new title, The Laundry, which is up for Kickstarter right now. Jared Logan played it with an amazing crew of players, Abu Salim, Ross Bryant, Josephine McAdam, and Merlu, and had a fantastic time. I'm not going to spoil anything. Go check it out. It's on YouTube, and it's available on Supercast.
It's on the Glass Cannon Network subscription service under the Friends of the Pod section.
Okay, Friends of the Pod. There you go. Check it out there if you'd like. If you're interested, also, check out this Kickstarter. Get in on the ground floor. Get your copy early for The Laundry. It's kind of a, how would you describe it? It's a UK Delta Greenish
Little Delta Green, a little modern Call of Cthulhu, but it's with like British Secret Service agents. So it's,
yeah.
It's a little Are You Being Served as well.
Yes, a little of that as well. Okay, now next week, starting Monday, we got more Friends of the Pod coming. We teased this last time as well, but now it's up and running and it's produced, finished, polished, and ready to rock. Next Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, premiering on YouTube, Blade Runner, Fiery Angels, a new operation in the Blade Runner RPG, sponsored by Free League, our good buddies at Free League, and we'd love for you to check that out. Skid is running it with a phenomenal cast. Troy, who is in Blade Runner again?
All right, so we got Jason Charles Miller, Seth Skorkowski, Alicia Marie, and Paula Deming. We've never had this combo before.
No,
it's a wild combo. And Skid's going to be running it. He's really, really excited about it. I mean, Skid's so excited about it. Skid is going to be running Blade Runner during our Nashville retreat for people to come to the retreat. He is like way into Blade Runner right now. Three episodes of that, Friends of the Pod. It's going to be like the adventure from this Fiery Angels companion, or what would you call it, a source book that just came out. It's a cool game. I mean, I don't think
it's a source book. I mean, my understanding is that it's an operation. It's like an adventure.
Oh, okay. I thought it was like a supplemental John that also came with an adventure, but I could be
perhaps right. It has additional material, like supplemental material in it. But yeah, it's a nice little box set and the whole adventure's in there and there's all kinds of added supplements you can use with your game. So anyway, very excited to check that out. I mean, we say Skid is going to run that only because it's airing on this coming Monday night, but Skid's already been off and running. And I know from playing Blood of the Wild with him and Paula Deming that Paula Deming is fired up. She's having a great time playing it. So it must be pretty awesome. So check that out starting Monday. I haven't seen it yet. We'll talk about it a little bit more next week. We're streaming live video games, of course, this week. You're continuing with Baldur's Gate tomorrow, Thursday at 2:00 Eastern on the main channel. Troy will be continuing the saga.
The game that never ends.
Yeah, I was trying to think about what to play this week, and I was tossing around some ideas. By the way, throw some ideas in the comments if there's things you want to see me stream, because I'm kind of like, I'm up in the air right now. I can play a lot of different things, and I'm curious what people are interested in seeing. But Troy just suggested while we were in studio yesterday, he's like, you should stream Baldur's Gate 3. It never ends. His tagline for it.
The game never ends. I mean, I'm at the point now where I think I've got like essentially three big story missions, but I've cleared out the whole final map with the exception of like a couple other things. And then there's a couple of side johns I got to do, but now I can see the whole map. I'm just going around completing everything, stealing the mail from every fucking mailbox just to make sure I don't trigger any new quests that I want to do. It's horrible. It's a horrible way to play the game, but I am enjoying it.
That's fantastic. Well, what is going to come up for me this Friday? A little bit of a surprise, a change of events. This came together just yesterday while we were together recording. This Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to try out Lethal Company, which has just been recommended to me by many people, including Sydney, who's been really into it. And she's like, you got to play. And so her and I and Matthew, who's been dying to jump on and play, he's got Steam, but he hasn't had time, is going to jump in and join us on Friday. So Sydney and I and Matthew playing a sci-fi horror survival game, basically. It should be very interesting. I think it's going to be really legitimately actually scary, and then I'm going to embarrass myself on air and never play the game again. So that's sort of what I'm expecting to happen. But it's supposed to be phenomenal. You should see the rating for this game, Troy. It is first of all, it's $9.99 on Steam, and it has 309,000 reviews, 5 out of 5 stars, basically 100% almost.
Wow.
People freaking love this game. But yeah, it's a sci-fi horror, like collection and crafting survival game or something. God,
the graphics are so like basic. It's
well, yeah, that's why it's $10. It's like, but that's something about it. It's just yeah,
I
people
bet you
are
it's phenomenal.
People are loving it. God, well, I'll tell you so one games. Cool thing about it that Sydney told me. If you when you use the game audio to play with your friends, like through the game, not through Discord, but through the game, when somebody like. Like things come out of the dark and kill you. And when somebody dies, their audio is cut off. And you can be in pure blackness. So she's like, you'll be like, Matthew. Matthew? And it's like, he's just not responding. And you, he might be dead, but he might also have walked down a corridor and you can't hear him anymore. Like, and sometimes you can hear him real quiet. And like you can find them by their voice and shit. It's like
that's
supposed
cool.
to be really, really neat. So we're going to try that out on Friday live stream. That'll be fun. All right. Last piece of news before we get into the app.
Dude, I've got at least two more pieces of news. So you can
go.
Oh,
you go. You go.
All right. Well, we announced last week a bunch more tickets went on sale for the Glass Cannon live tour. Now every show is on sale except the Christmas extravaganza. So obviously we're in KC in Austin next week. There are still a few tickets left in Austin. Let's sell that out, Texas. I want to say there's like 40 or so tickets left. KC, there's a bunch of tickets because it's a big theater, but you guys have done a lot better than I thought you would. However,
yeah, KC,
you didn't beat St. Louis, so we will not be coming back to KC unless you get your act together, and we will come back to St. Louis. And then next month, we're in Vancouver and St. Paul. In June, Denver and Nashville. Well, now you can get tickets for the Gen Con shows. We've got Helium Comedy Club, which, by the way, is almost completely sold out
That's
already.
That's insane.
VIP sold out for the, we only do one Glass Cannon live now at Helium because we've got 15 other shows we do. Get those tickets if you're coming to Gen Con because they will be gone probably by next week. And then we're doing Call of Cthulhu live again this year. It's going to be modern Call of Cthulhu on Friday night of Gen Con at the Athenaeum on August 2nd. You can get tickets for both of those indie shows. Boston on September 14th at our home club, the Paradise Rock Club. And then Portland, Oregon on October 10th and LA on October 12th. All of those tickets are now on sale. Grab them. I'm shocked at how fast these shows are going. It's so nice to get these shows up months and months in advance because usually we only have them up like with a month and a half lead time, 2 month lead time. So hopefully add to a lot more sellouts. And then we got another show. Dude, did you just get this confirmation email while we're recording this? Because I'm going to announce this shit.
You're going to announce now?
Yeah. It's happening. If you want to get people fired up that this is happening so they can make some travel arrangements or get off their New York asses.
I just got it. Oh, dear.
All right. So we did this Rambo show at Stand Up New York a couple months ago, I guess, right? February? I don't remember. It feels like 100 years
ago. Yeah, mid-February. Yeah.
Me, Joe, Skid.
2 months ago.
And then comedians Natalie Cuomo and Khalees Hawkins. It was great. They debuted it last week on the Evil Genius Games YouTube channel. Well, we're going to do another one of these at their new stand-up New York club, which is in Times Square on May 31st. Same cast, me, Skid, Joe, Natalie, and Khalees, except we're going to be playing Let's Play Kong Skull Island.
Kong Skull Island.
So we're
going to
create a Kong Skull Island movie in 2 hours. May 31st is going to be in Times Square. So if you live in New York, what are you doing? Literally, if you don't show up for this, this is why we don't do New York shows, because you don't show up. So come to the comedy club. We had so much fun last time. It was so intimate. We hung out with everybody afterwards. And if you were like, you know what? I need an excuse to come to New York. Come in May. It's beautiful. And come see us do Kong Skull Island.
I didn't know how the first one would go, but going into this second one, I can pretty much guarantee you, you will laugh your ass off for 2 hours straight. Mm-hmm. I mean, that mm-hmm. was just a wild, wild show. And yeah, it's so intimate. I mean, I don't know how big the new space is. We got to get in there, but I'm sure it's going to be of a comparable size. Maybe 100 people fit in there, you know? Yeah. And so you're just all up on each other. It's a comedy club, you know? So It's really, really small, really intimate. And then, yeah, we just all hung out afterwards at a bar. I mean, it was so much fun. Much fun.
I can't wait to.
Yeah, it's going to be great. All right. Yeah, those were two good pieces of news. I did not see that confirmation come through. Holy shit.
It's happening.
All right. Last piece of news before we get on to GCP is we talked about this about a month ago. Jared and I did talk Nerdy Town Hall for our Vorpal subscribers on the Discord stages. The next one is next week, right before our next fodder drop. So I got to mention
it
here.
Great.
But it's going to be Tuesday night, April 23rd. 7:30 Eastern time. Tuesday night, April 23rd, 7:30 Eastern. If you are a Vorpal subscriber, put it in your calendar. If you're not a Vorpal subscriber, upgrade so you can come and hang out with us live. We bring subscribers up on stage. You talk to us. We chat about some nerdy topics. And Skid is going to join us this week as well. So we're going to have Skid as a guest. And you can talk live to Skid. You can just chat him up right on the show. So it's going to be a really, really fun town hall next Tuesday, April 23rd, 7:30 Eastern. For more information, go to glasscannonnetwork.com/subscribe, or just click the subscribe button on the webpage. I'm not sure what the actual URL is, but subscribe. You can't miss it when you get to the webpage. You can find out more information there.
A lot of news. You weren't
that's what I'm saying, man. I'm sweating. It's been different than past weeks. Past weeks has been a little quiet on news, chunkier on episodes. And with this one, yeah, a lot of news. All right, let's get into the episode. We're only going to briefly talk about this episode because what a cool one. We have a really, really cool open with the tree balls. We'll get right down to it. It's the tree balls that we're going to discuss for a second here. And messing with eugenics kind of thing, it creates some interesting topics. We also are revealed. We get revealed Kinipo on his throne, or on their throne. So I don't want to go into too much detail about this until future fodders when we finalize all of the Kinipo stuff, because I just don't want to talk too much about it. But let's talk about the tree balls for a second, because we did kind of wrap that up. Ultimately, all I want to discuss right now is your adaptation of this mechanism, machine, whatever you want to call it, in this adventure. It seems that you mentioned to us that you kind of changed a little bit of what it said it did. Modified it? Can you talk to us about what you decided as a GM you wanted to do here and why you modified it and how?
Yeah, I found the whole thing in the book as written to be pretty uninspiring, from the mechanics of how it worked to like what you got. So I just wanted to zhuzh it up a little bit, especially where this has been kind of a low treasure adventure thus far. I wanted to like really, you know, do something cool. And a lot of it was just seeing how excited you guys were as you were doing it. I was like, all right, well, let's do more and more, but then let's see if we can take a dark turn. And it was wonderful that it just sort of happened. We kind of discovered it by having Asta. Was it Asta, I think, that got sort of this hag, she got like a hag ability, right? She got the ability to, what was it?
I can't remember, but I thought she got the changeling trait, right?
Yeah, the changeling, I gave her the changeling trait. Now that's actually how it's written, is you get a trait. But in this sense, story-wise, seeing Talitha be like, oh, this is really, really bad, you don't understand, was a nice sort of added bonus. But just looking to what's written, I mean, I don't want to get too much into what I've done here, but
it's really more about why. And you said that you found it a little bit uninspiring, and you also found that the players were getting so invested in it that you decided, you know what, let's kick this up a notch because they're having a lot of fun with it. And then the story takes a dark turn. To me, kind of asked and answered in a way.
Yeah, I basically rewrote how it operates. So with the checks, I didn't change the DC of the checks, but the way it's written, I wanted it to be, as opposed to random, I wanted it to be a little bit more based on the result of your check. And so I rewrote it so that it's based on failure, critical failure, success, and critical success. Because as written, it's more like success or crit, and then you roll to see what you get. I'm like, there should be higher stakes, critical failure, success, and critical success. And as written, when things go right, because things can go wrong and you take damage or you take some other sort of, at this point, I guess I can just tell you take like permanent charisma damage, which to a sorcerer would be brutal. I don't think it would really hurt any of you guys except maybe some of your diplomacy checks and whatnot. But you, as written, you're supposed to get just
traits. I feel like, isn't Buggles charisma based? Or is he intelligence based?
Buggles might be charisma based. I'm not.
I feel like psychic's main key ability is charisma. I could be wrong.
Yeah, you get like disfigured. Basically, you get permanently disfigured. They suggest like fingers emerging from your cheeks, like your ears growing five times the original size. So it's like gross stuff that gives you permanent charisma damage that can only be removed with like spells you don't really have access to. But the way it's supposed to work is you're supposed to get either ancestry traits or creature type traits. I just thought that was super boring. Now, it worked in the sense of getting the changeling trait for Asta, but when Talitha stepped in to receive from Asta, I just thought, like, given Talitha the Kitsune trait wasn't really interesting. Let's give her an ability and just kind of adapt it, give it a little more juice, and it seemed to work out.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I see what you're saying about the traits not being particularly interesting. Though I will say I would have liked, one of my takeaways is like, I thought it was so cool that Zephyr stepped in, Brother Ramius stepped in, and Brother Ramius walks out with low light vision. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, opposed to the elf trait.
Right, but I'm saying is like, I would have loved to have the elf trait, but that is just specific to this adventure. It would have been really interesting to be tied into that thing permanently just because of that mechanism. But other than that, I can't really – they bring it up a lot in the books and stuff and in the adventures where they're like, oh, if you have this trait or someone has X trait or this trait for you know, in terms of ancestry traits and class traits, whatever – and I just find that they don't really matter that much in game. Like,
that's how I felt too. Like, it'd be different if like one of you was like, if Champ Kindly was in there and then someone got the undead trait.
Yes.
You know, that to me seems a lot cooler. Now, it's not, I can understand why getting the elf trait would be fun, but it just felt too like metagamey. Like, it's more like better for your character sheet. But how do you then role play that? Would your ears change to be a little more elven? Okay, well, that's cool. But as written, it's just like you get the trait. And that didn't – I thought, let's give him a piece of what makes an elf, low light vision. I thought that was a little more interesting. But
yeah.
I don't know. I can
think in 1E they called an ancestry trait. You know, like low light vision was an ancestry trait for an elf. It is interesting, but I liked what you did with the abilities. I liked that Talitha got the ability to change shape and stuff like that, which is really fun and really cool. A limited version. By the way, psychics, this is courtesy of Demiplane, are intelligence or charisma. So you can build however you want. I believe Buggles is built with charisma. So that would have been devastating to have permanent ability loss in charisma. Could you imagine how angry Skid would have been?
Yeah, you need like remove curse to get rid of it.
And
that's a third level spell, which where do you guys get it? Fifth level?
Fifth level, yeah. Whew, brutal. Okay, cool, interesting. Like I said, I'm not going to talk about the Kanipo stuff because I want to let that whole thing play out, and then we will discuss it here on FAW. We'll go into great detail. It's such an important part of the story that I don't want to go into detail until we find out where it all goes. So with that, I'm not going to talk about the episode anymore. Let's get right into We Are Stupid, and then, of course, a little listener mail. But first...
We are stupid!
Dumb. All right. So, let's see. Okay, so these are going back a couple episodes because we didn't have it, if you remember, last fodder, we had to record it early, so we didn't have it. And then the last week, we didn't have a fodder. So we're just kind of catching up here. But most of these are concepts that we will that will generate some conversation. I think it's going to be pretty interesting. And thank you to Professor Eric for laying all this out. Even I told him he could take a vacation. He didn't want it. He wasn't interested. He wasn't
spring
interested.
Spring
break. A little spring break for Professor Eric. all right. First of all, it is his opinion. Now, Professor Eric he does not get a thrill out of commenting on fan crits and fumbles. That is not his jam sauce. However, he was like, I have to say, I feel like the fan fumble that hit the why do I always forget his name? The guy who was crawling on the ceiling.
The Looksy Man.
The Looksy Man was just too much. It was too strong. And of course, we all agree. Now, I had an idea, and I want to pitch this idea to you. So Professor Eric's idea was, instead of being silenced for 1d4 rounds, I think the spirit of it would have been much better for him to be stupefied one or two for 1d4 rounds. Then he has to roll a flat check to cast the spells. It's a little bit of a penalty, but it isn't so game-breaking, right?
Yeah.
Well, I had this idea after that fight. By the way, for the record, I hated that fumble as well. I'm furious that it happened. I think that it gave us a get out of jail free card, which is not enjoyable for me. I don't like that.
I think
that
he would have
shit.
Annihilated you guys.
I think it would have been like a TPK. And I don't like to get out of that for something like this. However, I will say it was a die roll, right? So there is that argument, which is like you rolled D4, you rolled a four. But rolling a four on a D4 is not that unusual. So it wasn't like it was that bad of a roll. So here's this idea I had. I want to pitch to you. I thought about going through our crits and fumbles and permanently having almost like a policy that we change all submissions for crits and fumbles, no matter what the penalty is, if the duration is a set of rounds, 1d4, 1d6, whatever, that we just permanently say any durations gained from a crit success or a fumble are until the end of your next turn, period. So it's always a one round thing, basically. It makes it clean. A lot of things work like that in 2E. Like when you get a condition, it'll be like until the end of your next turn, X, Y, or Z. Now, if people want to make a crit or fumble that just does something for this turn, that's fine. But if it's for 1d4 rounds or for two rounds or for whatever, I think that we should just scrap it and just make it until the end of your next turn. And that way, it's never going to get too out of hand. If this guy was silenced for one round, that's huge.
Yeah.
And that's huge enough. Now, you could have rolled a one on the 1d4.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I don't know. I just feel like that is enough. Especially since fumbles are not a part of the game mechanics at all.
Yeah.
You know, we're adding this in.
And a lot of – I've noticed at least in the level play that we've been doing between Gatewalkers and Strange Aeons that even spells that have a duration, you tend to get a chance to reroll your save at the beginning or end of each turn, even if it's something that takes for multiple rounds. Like take, for example, I want to say Confusion or what it's probably called in the remaster, Silly Head. Let's Amazing. Say someone casts Silly Head on you. I want to say that, like, you get a say, let me see. I'm probably let me look at the remastered version. It's still called Confusion. The target is confused. All right, so failure for Confusion is the target is confused for 1 minute. It can attempt a new save at the end of each of its turns to end the confusion.
Yeah,
so
almost even something like a with persistent, a duration of
1 minute, you still get that that chance, like you said, like persistent damage. And that's a, you know, that's a fourth level spell. And I've seen this a lot that like even spells that have like a minute duration or like multiple rounds, you still get a free chance.
Yeah, and Confusion is also a really good example to bring up because it's something that fans seem to enjoy writing into fumbles. You know, because it's a nice, clean fumble. It's like, oh, you're confused. Like, and so to have that be like, yeah, you're confused. And oh, man, it's multiple rounds. At least you get a chance to save every round on it. That's another way that we can go. But yeah, I was just thinking of a way to just, it could just be clean, easy, and it's always the same. It's like durations are always until the end of your next turn. Anyway, something we can discuss off air, but I just wanted to bring it up. And let us know in the comments. What do you guys think about that? And I'm not interested in comments that you don't like fan crits and fumbles. That particular argument is moot in this argument. We're only talking about how do we modify these so that when they do come up, they're not too devastating. All right, so... Oh, this is a good one. So he brings up that, remember we talked about Shocking Grasp is something that was very important to Asta because, and it was removed in the remaster or it was renamed Thunderstrike. But then some of the mechanics on it were changed so that it no longer has a spell attack roll. It now, you have to roll a save. Mm-hmm. Magi cannot use a spell with a saving throw for their spell strike. They can only use spells with a spell attack roll. So that effectively removed a really fun spell, Shocking Grasp, that was essentially always used as a mage's spell. Not only as a mage spell, but that's what a mage's loved to use from the mages. So what Professor Eric says has become a PFS standard and which he thinks is in a plurality of home games that he has seen people use is, quote, if the spell has a new name, you can use either version. If the spell kept the same name, you have to use the remastered mechanics. So if they kept the same name and they just touched up the mechanics, PFS uses the new mechanics. But if they changed the name from an original D&D spell, you can use either version.
Interesting. I mean, I knew before you even said it, I wouldn't like it. And I don't. But I get it. I get it. I just feel like the hybrid version that we're trying to do, that just takes it in a different direction that I don't know if I like.
It's well, I mean, you're kind of like you're leaning into the hybrid so much that you'll never evolve out of it. Right. I feel like.
Right. It seems like a hybrid of more convenient hybrid. And I don't know. It's really tricky. And
let me add one more layer to it. And this is where he kind of finalizes it, which is for the Magus, you have to understand the Magus is fully published and built pre-remaster.
Yeah.
So when they remaster, in the overall remaster of spells in 2E, one thing that they did was they moved a lot of spell attack roll spells to saving throw spells. It felt like they needed to do it for game balance because the casters were weakened by spell attack roll spells. They needed other people to roll saves, and that was better, especially basic saves where you could at least get half damage through and stuff like that on a success. So Professor Eric says this was probably a buff for most spellcasters. This helped most spellcasters, but it goes directly against the Magus, what works for the Magus. Because
I wonder if they just forgot or they were like, we'll deal with that later.
No, what he says is, I expect if the Magus ever gets remastered as a class, when they do the Magus remaster, you know, of that class,
right,
they'll probably account for that and do some specific Magus spells that only Maguses can use. You know, that kind of thing. So
sucks to be nerfed, to have that class just be nerfed.
While other spellcasters are buffed.
Right.
Because of the remaster. Yeah.
You're nerfed because of release schedules.
Right. Yeah.
But, I don't know. It gives me a fucking headache. I hate even thinking about it. It makes me angry.
I love thinking about it. I just love talking. I just love parsing through it. It's such an interesting problem. It's an interesting problem to have to address.
I'm just such a purist in the way I like things to be orderly and, this just all this does is invite so much gray area, and I don't like gray area.
I love a good gray area.
You love a good gray area.
love playing it. In the gray.
Look at him. He loves it.
Okay, let's talk about spell components in the remaster, which we talked about in episode 28. We mentioned about spell components. They're gone. And we thought they were. We don't see them anywhere. They're gone.
No one used them anyways.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We never used them in our home game.
So what happens if you are raising someone from the dead?
I don't know. I don't have that prepared. If it costs something more than usual, I also don't know if they. It's interesting. Like, do you need to remaster? Oh, no,
cost. Raised. There is a cost.
Gemstones worth
a total value of the target's level times 200 gold. So it's fucking expensive. And heightened versions of it, like 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, can be up to target's level times 3,200 gold. That's wild.
Well, why would you heighten it? Okay, if the spell is successful, the creature returns to life with one hit point. I'm sorry, I'm going to put this on screen so everybody can look at this, because it's a very, very good good question that you bring up, which is, this is a very specific classic spell that we'll bring it up here. Boom. You attempt to call forth the dead creature's soul. The creature must have died within the past 3 days. That's big. Phrasma, blah, blah, blah. If the spell is successful, the creature returns to life with one hit point. No spells prepared, no spell slots available, blah, 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 blah. The time spent in the boneyard leaves the target temporarily debilitated. Clumsy 2, drained 2, enfeebled 2 for 1 week. These are all cool.
Yeah.
These conditions can't be removed by any means. The creature is also permanently changed by its time in the afterlife, such as a slight personality shift, a streak of white hair, or a strange new birthmark.
The basic version only allows you to raise dead of 13th level or lower. You have to heighten it if you want 15th, 17th, 19th.
All right. So I thought perhaps the heightening of it would allow you to get more hit points back or not have to do the debilitated part or something.
Yeah.
But no, it's just the higher level you get, the more it costs is really all it is.
Right.
That's what it boils down to. All right. So it's not so much components as cost. But essentially the way that he says they do it mechanically in 2E is that they nest these traits. So, you have verbal and somatic. That's what all these spells have, either or both. But then within verbal and somatic, you have within verbal often the concentrate trait, and underneath somatic, you have the manipulate trait. So then all those traits kind of stack up so that this is what you need to cast a spell. And thus, some spells provoke attacks of opportunity, some don't, blah, blah, blah. This was an interesting point he brought up. Of course, for Buggles, the psychic replaces all verbal components with mental. So they still, so they have, they still have the concentrate trait, but they would not be affected by silence. That was interesting. If if Buggles ever got silenced, we have to remember, like, he could still cast any of his spells.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Makes sense. That's what a psychic should do.
Yeah. It makes perfect sense. Really, really awesome.
That's great.
Okay, this is a problem that we know about. We talked about it off air. I don't know if it got on air, but Zephyr had low light vision, should not have been taking flat checks against the look-see man when he was in the dim light.
Was like also a sort of consideration of how we were thinking of it. Like when he was in, was he in dim light up there or was he in darkness?
He was in dim light.
He was?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure we discussed this off air. Kate was like, "What was I doing?" I remember us chatting about it in the studio. But yeah, we did know about that mistake, and look, lighting levels are one of the easiest things to make mistakes on, especially when you have different
and when you're types of vision around the table. Too. Like it's one thing for like it's very clear if everybody's on the ground where the lighting level is, but when I put my light there, well, how many feet up
does
is
it bleed
how many,
up into the darkness?
Right, is the darkness up there? That's where it got a little. We kind of forget that.
Very, very interesting. Okay, quick one. I got to send this to Sydney. Asta's Foxfire has a maximum range of 20 feet, not a range increment of 20 feet. This was that cantrip that she used, using her tail to cast the spell. Professor Eric believes the Looksy Man might have been out of range, given that he was up on the ceiling, and so maybe shouldn't have ever taken any of that damage. So Sydney's going to have to pay.
All comes out in the wash.
Yep, exactly. Okay, moving on to the next step real quick. Let me see. There was... we mentioned this on the show, but Magic Missile is now a Force Barrage. Sydney has a spell called Force Bolt. That is a special one-action Magic Missile is essentially what it is. It's a focus spell, and it can only use one action. She used it correctly and everything, but he was just clarifying what it is in the remaster. Tearing out a page of a spell book and using it as a scroll. There's no rules for that in 2E. Skid said you could do that. And he's like, I don't really know where he's getting that. I think it's a common misconception. He thinks it's not even in 1E. He thinks that it's from 3.0.
I was going to say, I've never heard that. So it must be like from a former iteration of the game.
Yeah. So if you know the deep knowledge or you could find it where Professor Eric couldn't, put it in the comments below. If you can use a spell from a spell book as a scroll and consume that page just to use a spell desperately once, let us know. But it's
cool. Home game rule. Home rule.
Yeah, it is a cool home game rule. I mean, it also has a really good cost. Like, the spell's gone. You can no longer learn it. You know, so it is, I think it balances pretty well. I don't know why they took it out, but.
That's why I love playing a wizard on Baldur's Gate. Like, anytime I go buy scrolls, I'm like, all right, hold on here. Let me see what I need. I'll take one of those, a couple of these. Yeah.
All right, now we've already caught up to a most recent episode 30, just two minor things. One for Professor Eric. He has no rules adjustments, obviously, but episode 30, a lot of role play. He says the tree balls thing and the way you adjusted it. Chef's kiss. He loved it. He said it made it way better than what was in the book. This one, not from Professor Eric. This is from the YouTube comments on episode 30 from Henningstein 2445. A minor, we are stupid. I feel like I've mentioned this to you before, and it is something that's irking me a little bit. I just want to make sure that you know what you're doing. The remaster aid was... what's the word I'm looking for when they... eroded.
Updated? Oh,
eroded to DC 15. It is not 20 base.
Ah, we keep forgetting that. Yeah,
you can make it 20 whenever you want.
Sure,
but the base is 15. So this happens in another episode upcoming where there was an aid and it was a fail. I didn't say anything. You were like, "It's not. It's a fail because it wasn't 20." And I was like, "I'm going to decide that he wanted it to be 20." But just to remind you,
yeah, that's what I did. Yeah,
DC 15 is the remaster. So we do know that. And he said it really improves the action a lot, especially in the early game, which I agree with.
Makes it a more viable third action now, because where was DC 20? It's kind of like, all right, I'll aid. And you, although I think we hit it more often than most, but I always thought that was crazy high.
Yeah, but you never crit. The 15 gives you a chance to crit, which is fun because then you get a +2. It's not game breaking, but it's excitement around the table. It's getting the players invested in each other's actions and turns, which I think is always a positive thing to do. All right, let's take some questions from the Nation with a little listener mail, and then we're going to get out of here.
Is the first question, how am I going to hold my piss for the next 10 minutes? Gotta get your brain up on it.
All right, lightning round of listener mail. We got to catch up on a lot. It's been a few weeks. So first, Bruce from Lynn Valley, Kansas.
Bruce!
I was so excited to hear you were coming to KC for a live show. I went as fast as I could to purchase tickets. It wasn't until today, though, that I looked at the date of the show and realized, to my horror, it is the first round of the NFL draft.
I know.
What were you thinking, LaValle? Dude, he says he's furious.
I'm furious. This is the most excited I've been for an NFL draft in years, and I have to watch it during the show.
He expects you to announce the first 10 picks from the stage as they happen in between turns. He puts, quote, a 25 is going to be a hit. A couple things are going to happen. First, he does 15 points of slashing damage. And with the first pick, the Chicago Bears select.
Yeah. Oh, God. That's brutal, man. I'm so mad about it. I'm so mad because we're doing Degenerate Dungeon next week for the draft special. And I'm so excited about it. I was like, wait, no, I'm on stage.
I'm mad about it. I don't remember what came up last year, but there was some work thing last year. And I said to Brian Hagan, host of Degenerate Dungeon, my brother-in-law, I was like, next year, I will be at your place for the first round of the NFL draft. Because my other brother-in-law goes over there every year. Yeah. And they have a great night.
I know.
They have so much fun. And I was like, I'll be there next year. Book it. And then, of course, you know, we booked this show for this date. I was just like, God damn it.
All right. So everything's an hour earlier. Help my uncaffeinated brain out.
So it starts at 7:30 Central, right? The show?
No, it starts at 8.
It's an 8 o'clock show?
Central.
That means the first picks will already be in the bag before we ever get on
air. Okay. So backstage, we can watch the first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, Giants pick 6. That's all I fucking care about. Yeah, except when they trade in and grab a quarterback later in the first round.
You know what? Oh my God. I don't want to get into a sports discussion. All right, let's keep it going.
Okay.
With listener mail. This is an interesting one. I'm not going to read this whole thing, Mike.
Okay.
Mike from Norfolk, Mass.
Norfolk.
Writes in, again, mad at you. I love a good mad at you lineup of listener mail.
I'm mad about you.
This one is, it starts with, quote, when did Troy get soft? And what he's pointing out is poor tactical play with the look-see man. And he brought up something because he's like, you could have still owned them, even with your condition. You could have played keep away a lot longer. And I know where he's coming from. And this brings up an interesting conversation. Essentially, what he said is what you needed to do, and this is strategic advice, is you needed to use your round to ready an action to move when light was cast on you in your area. And it's a good idea. Now, look, strategy, like points and tips, we could all use those all the time in hindsight, right? Like we always, The reason I bring it up is I never thought before of using a two action ready to move. I always think about using a two action ready to strike. I'm like, you can only do one action with it, but you can use a two action ready to do anything that's one action. So don't forget that, Nish. It's like, thank you, Mike, for bringing that up because it's a really good point. I'm going to ready an action as soon as I'm as soon as this gets there. I'm going to move over to here behind cover or something.
Yeah, that's like, nice. I like that.
It's an interesting idea. So thank you for bringing that up. And then he brought up an interesting question. Respond in the comments, please, Professor Eric. I'd like your feedback on this. If Talitha rolls devise a stratagem and gets that roll against the look-see man while he's in dim light, does she roll the flat check? Like if she decides to use the strike, does she have to commit to the strike and then roll the flat check? Or does she roll the flat check before she even devises a stratagem?
I almost feel like as written, the devise a stratagem is for the flat check because it's your next D20 roll. And since flat checks is
now, it's your next strike. It is your next strike. But the flat check is part of the strike. Yeah, I don't know. This is really tricky territory. And again, devise a stratagem.
Choose a creature you can see and roll a D20. If you strike the chosen creature later this round, you must use the result of the roll you made for your strike's attack roll instead of rolling. Yeah. So it's risk, right? You're like, got an 18. So
he says, devise a stratagem as an effect that targets a creature she can see. So concealment might apply. It certainly does to the subsequent attack. So yeah, like, do you roll a flat check while you're rolling the stratagem? Or do you devise a stratagem? Oh, I rolled a 19, 18. I'm going to use that. then you have to roll a flat check to see if you get through.
That's how I think.
Yeah, that's how I think too.
Being mean, but like you roll natty 18, let's go. I'm going to use that as my hit. Okay. Well, you still got to roll that flat check. You know you got a hit sitting there. Just get over a five.
Four.
Yeah. I mean, you could certainly rule it either way, but to me, you're like that flat check. I don't know. You could do it either way. I would do it the more dickish way.
Tell us in the comments. What do you think? What would you do there? That's a really interesting mixing of the rules. So thanks, Mike. That's a good one. Last one from Dan in Reading, PA. I mean, a stone's throw from where I grew up, Reading, PA. Love it. Don't split the party is Dan's first comment. Whether it's a player's choice to leave their party, Summoner or Dragon causes a cave-in, parties get split. This happened in Legacy of the Ancients recently. That's why it got brought up. Do you scale back any encounters or hazards to match the new party size if a party splits? If so, how? Or do you let them suffer with the full encounter balance for the whole party just to make them pay for splitting the party? How do you approach this generally as a GM when your players split? I don't know if it happens in Time for Chaos at all.
It happens a lot in Time for Chaos.
If you've ever taken the foot off the gas because they split, has that ever happened?
Yeah, I mean, it happens in Time for Chaos. It happens in Get in the Trunk a lot more than it does in our D20 games, just because, you know, it's the nature of the game. And I think that's why I prefer those games, is because you could do a lot more with that. I think if it happened in Pathfinder, I would just, that's the encounter that you got to figure it out. And your best solution is to run. You know what I mean? Because and now you've got if you survive, if you get out of there, you know what's in there. So you guys can study, prepare, and be like, beyond that room is a red dragon. Now in Masks or in Time for Chaos, I'm just thinking like, usually when they split up, they go in twos. But they've come across some really tough stuff in twos. There was an episode in season one where one of them was doing one thing and three of them I knew were going into an encounter. So they were down one hand. So I just went full force on the encounter and there was just no way that other person was just having like a bottle episode. I don't know. I think I'd probably be a little bit more forgiving. But also a lot of these things are written in Call of Cthulhu scenarios where like the cultists will just capture you. You know what I mean? As opposed to just killing you. And then you're out. Now you've got to bring another character because your other character is captured.
And then that becomes a new objective, which is really fun for the party. They got to, are they going to save that person? Yeah.
There's certain things you can do like that. And you could certainly do that in Pathfinder as well. I think that like if someone stumbled into a room by themselves and there was no one else, I would just like start the encounter and, I don't know, play by ear.
Yeah, I'd say in general, like the general spirit of the question, I would answer it that it's case by case, of course. I would generally make adjustments to scale back because I like in my games to encourage splitting the party. I find it more interesting. I think it's more fun in games for not only is the danger heightened a little bit, but characters get closer when they get split off. Mm-hmm. Two characters that are alone for a little bit of a longer time tend to role play a little bit more than they would when they're in a group of four or five. I don't have any interest in the group of five walking into every social encounter together and talking to every NPC all together as a group. It just kind of seems silly to me.
Yeah.
By that same token, I don't necessarily like it in dungeons either and in dangerous places either. I think that encouraging them to split up and then not punishing them for that is something that I like to do as a GM. Now, that said, if someone is being an asshole, that's a different territory. Like there's a time when a player is just being a jerk and that player needs to get penalized. Or it could be two players that are just, in your opinion as a GM, obviously trying to foul something up, then you can penalize them if you'd like. And I wouldn't overscale. I would just leave things as they were. But I'd say in general, I like to encourage splitting the party because I think it makes for an interesting game overall. That is the sum total of my answer. But thank you, Dan in Reading. I appreciate that question. Thank you, Mike in Norfolk, and Bruce. All fun and good comments today. So that's gonna wrap her up, Lavalster. That's gonna there do it for the FOD today. Really fun to be back. Nice having a week off, but nice to see you guys again. So again, lots to comment on in the YouTube comments here today of this ep. Let us know what you think, and we'll talk about it a little bit more next week. Man, we got a big ep next week as we discuss the opening of the Kenepo fight. So we will talk more next week. But until then, have a good weekend, everybody. Watch us live on Saturday night on twitch.tv/theglasscannon, 8 o'clock Eastern. It's going to be a good old time. Until then, take it easy, everybody, and we'll see you next week. Bye!
I gotta pee!
It's time to make your membership official. Become an official member of The Naish today at jointhenaish.com. That's jointhenaish.com, where you'll get access to exclusive podcasts and live streams you can't find anywhere else. See what everybody's talking about and join The Naish today at jointhenaish.com.